Joining us, become a partner, send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Remember, God has your marriage on his mind.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's got to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next few minutes, they're going to be the views of Bill Sellis. And he's going to be talking about his book, Psalm 83, The Missing Prophecy Revealed. Now, I try to stay away from prophecy to some extent, because a lot of my good friends are pre-trib rapture, some of them are mid-trib rapture, some of them are post-trib rapture. They all believe in the rapture, but I really don't know what position is right, and I don't want to spend my time arguing about something I'm not certain about. But certainly there are some exciting things happening today. Certainly we've been doing a number of programs on the resignation of Pope Benedict, and certainly the ancient prophecies about that, those from St. Malachi and those from the Zohar. And then, of course, we've talked to Bill Kennedy about St. Hildegard. There are all these prophecies, but there's things happening in the Near East today. And the Middle East are going to have a profound impact on you and I. And it really involves what's going on in Syria. Now, here day after day after day after day, we hear talk about what happened about Sandy Hook School and the 20 children who died, and certainly this is a terrible thing, but we never talk about the 70,000 civilians who have been systematically slaughtered in Syria. Thousands of them have been innocent children. They've died, they've been slaughtered over there in the civil war, and we are financing now the Al-Qaeda terrorists over there. Now, they don't want the American people to know that. They do everything they can, certainly, to distract our attention from that. Apparently, yesterday, there was a massive car bomb, several car bombs that went off over there in Damascus. I think 53 people were killed, a couple hundred wounded. And, of course, the Russians, and there was a meeting of the major nations, and certainly they wanted to condemn the terrorist act. And America wouldn't go along with that. America would not go along with condemning the terrorists over there. And the reason for it is, of course, is because we're financing this whole thing. Now, what you have to understand is that Syria controls the third largest supply of chemical weapons anywhere in the world. They got them from Saddam Hussein, and Saddam Hussein got them from us, but they're there in Syria, well, along with a lot of biological weapons. And the Israelis cannot allow the terrorists to get their hands on them. And Barack Obama has said that there is a red line, and he will not allow that to be crossed. And if it's crossed, he will actually put American troops into that area. Basically, if it looks like the terrorists are going to get their hands on chemical weapons, they're going to deploy American troops, and we have large numbers of troops over in Kuwait and other nations over there. I think they're just waiting to be deployed. I think there's a timetable. I think everything going on is following a pattern. But I believe that before long, one way or another, either the United States or Israel is going to be involved in what's going on in Syria. And, of course, when this happens, there can be terrible complications certainly there, but I think there could be complications here in the United States. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know that something serious is going to happen. And this goes all along, certainly, with this book that Bill Salas has written, Psalm 83. Because if you try to look at all the nations over there that certainly are supposed to go to war with Israel, it doesn't fit if you look at Ezekiel 38 and 39. But if you read Psalm 83, it begins to make a lot more sense. And that's what Bill Salas has written on and why I'm so fascinated to talk to him. And we'll be back in just a moment with Bill Salas.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-dry guy, the best you can buy.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and basically, of course, I was just talking about my view that we are heading into a confrontation, America, Israel, or perhaps both, into a confrontation in the Middle East. And, of course, if you look at Ezekiel 38 and 39, and you try to take all those nations that are there, the Gog, Magog war that we're told will come, it doesn't fit. I mean, there's something wrong. And I've just had this very uneasy feeling that I was missing something. And then, of course, I came across Bill Salas' book on Psalm 83. And that's the title of the book, Psalm 83, The Missing Prophecy Revealed. And he's talking about this prophecy written by some fellow named, was it Asaph?
Asaph, A-S-A-P-H.
Asaph. And, of course, this was written, he was certainly living at the time of King David. That's about almost 3,000 years ago. And basically, of course, at that time, why Israel was doing very, very well, that they were the dominant nation over there. But, of course, according to this prophecy, why, of course, there's to come a time when Israel is going to certainly be attacked, and Israel is going to certainly be attacked by all of its neighbors, and because they name all of the countries there, and it would be the Palestinians and the Lebanese and Jordan, but because they call them by many, many names, Edom and Ammon and Moab, and of course it sounds like Egypt and Saudi Arabia will be along with this, Palestine, all of the countries immediately adjacent to Israel will be involved in this attack, this war that is coming. But you pick up the story there, Bill, because I think you did such an excellent job of describing it. And really, I've never seen it described this way before, and yet it is so apropos. Now, one thing that Bill points out is that when you read the story of Ezekiel 38 and 39, that war, why Israel is living very comfortably at that time, and there are no walls at all in the land, and of course, then all these other countries come and attack Israel. But Israel has walls today, and they have this massive 25-foot wall that's it's going to be about well over 400 miles when it's completed. And they're really busy building that, separating the Palestinian section from Israel today. And there's so much, certainly, in the prophecies of what is going to be going on when there's a war, the Ezekiel 38 and 39 war, or 37 and 38 war, 38-39 war, that just do not apply to today. And yet there's so much in Psalm 83 that does. So you go ahead and explain it.
Absolutely. And you've done a wonderful job right there, Stan, prefacing it. The many onlookers who study Bible prophecy have been really fastened to the 52 descriptive verses in Ezekiel 38 and 39. They're very descriptive. They give us an enormous amount of prophetic detail about a massive invasion spearheaded by Russia with nine populations are listed by Ezekiel, and they would include, the general consensus would be Iran and Turkey and Libya and maybe the southern steppes of Russia, some of the breakaway states of the Soviet Union, on down through Somalia and perhaps even the Sudan area and Ethiopia. But the thing that's interesting that I point out in Psalm 83, the missing prophecy revealed, is that none of those populations that I just listed share adjacent or common borders with Israel. And this has puzzled many of the scholars who have wondered, well, why aren't those populations, the ancient Edomites and the Ammonites and Moabites, etc., why are they not listed by Ezekiel in Ezekiel 38-39? These are Israel's most notorious enemies. I call them an inner circle in my book, Psalm 83, and I call the Ezekiel countries an outer ring. Two entirely different confederacies with two entirely different motives. Psalm 83, the Arab populations, which would include Lebanon, where Hezbollah are also involved, would include Syria, Iraq, Jordan, the Palestinian refugees, the Hamas, the Muslim Brotherhood, the Egyptians, and the Saudi Arabians. Again, none of them listed in Ezekiel 38 and 39. Their goal is to cut the nation Israel off, that the name be remembered no more. And they says in verse 12 of Psalm 83, they want to take the pastures of God for themselves as a possession. So their motive, really, if it were to find fulfillment right now, is one more Arab state, and they want to flag the Palestinian flag over it. And the Palestinians are listed first under the banner of the 10th of Edom in Psalm 83. That's significant because whenever a population is listed first in a prophecy, they tend to be their plight tends to be what's being bannered there. In this case, it's a concern about the Palestinian refugees and them having an ability to have a state. And of course, we know that's big news now. But I show in the book how the Palestinians today have ethnic representation of Edomites throughout time. They migrated into the Palestinians today. So I really put this into a real-time application, Stan. And the thing with Ezekiel 38-39, yes, it's a very near prophecy, but like you said, they're not dwelling securely. We get very good description. Israel has to be dwelling securely in the latter years, without walls, bars, nor gates. They've got to be extremely wealthy because Russia's motive is not to take the promised land, but to take plunder and great booty. So we've got different populations, we've got different motives, and we have distinctly different destructions of these invaders. In Psalm 83, I point out that the Israeli Defense Forces today exist in fulfillment of Bible prophecy to defend the nation of Israel against the Psalm 83 Arab War versus Ezekiel 38, We're told in Ezekiel 38, verse 16 through Ezekiel 39, verse 6, that it's the Lord, through fire and brimstone and Old Testament, you know, destruction, single-handedly, that destroys that invasion. So we've got some seriously distinctive differences between the two prophecies. And the thing that has puzzled the scholar, like I mentioned, scholars, is that Ezekiel doesn't list any of the Psalm 83 populations, and neither does Psalm 83 list any of the Ezekiel populations. So some have said, well, you know, maybe Ezekiel wasn't familiar with the Edomites and the Ammonites and Moabites. No, not true. He mentions all of the Psalm 83 populations in one way or another 89 times in his 48 chapters. So he intentionally omits them, it appears, from the Ezekiel 38
and 39. Let me just stress, what Bill is saying is that if you read these different prophecies, Psalm 83 and Ezekiel 38 and 39, they're talking about different populations attacking Israel. That is the significant things. And basically, well, if you look and see how things are lining up today, it is not certainly the nations that are described in Ezekiel 38 or 39 that are threatening Israel. It is the nations that are described in Psalm 83. And go right ahead.
Absolutely. And you're right. The thing of concern as we distinguish between these prophecies is the bottom line is that Israel is going to come under attack. And the Bible says so. The prophecies speak of it.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about Israel being in a position right today, facing a revolution in Syria, where, of course, the terrorists, whoever is able to overthrow Assad, is going to have access to the third largest storehouse of chemical weapons in the entire world. Israel cannot allow that. They cannot let the terrorists get their hands on those chemical weapons because they know they'll be used against the Israeli people. Israel is going to have to move, and we're talking about not something 2 or 3 years from now. We're talking about something in the fairly near future. So, I mean, this really gives it an entirely different perspective. And certainly, if you listen to what Barack Obama has said, he has said, we will not allow the terrorists to get their hands on those chemical and biological weapons, and we will actually commit American troops. You're not hearing much about that, but he's actually made that statement. So go right ahead, Bill.
Well, right, Stan, and that, speaking of Barack Obama, there is a reason he's going over to Israel. He's scheduled to go over there on March 20th, and it's not to play golf. I mean, he's going over there because there is legitimate concerns that the Middle East is something's going to bust wide open over there. Israel cannot kick the nuclear can down with Iran's nuclear program much further. Many of us thought Israel was going to have to try to strategically strike Iran in 2012, but now it looks like it's becoming much, much more possible that 2013, maybe even by the summer, something is going to have to be done with Iran's nuclear program. They just announced recently that they are now increasing their enrichment of uranium in the tons up beyond 70%. I mean, it's just a matter of time at the pace that they want to go that Iran will have that nuclear weapon, and Israel has vowed that will not be allowed. And of course, there's the concerns now, like you said, with Syria, the chemical weapons, and Hezbollah has 50,000 rockets they've got aimed at Israel. And Hamas, at the end of last year, was shooting missiles not into just Sderot, but as far as into the capital of Israel, Tel Aviv. You know, and the Muslim Brotherhood, the sort of behind the scenes right now, they're laying a little bit low, but they have an agenda as well. Mohamed Morsi, the president of Egypt, campaigned on liberating the Gaza, where the Hamas are. You know, the Muslim Brotherhood founded the Hamas in 1987. And so, you know, they want to liberate the Gaza, meaning they want to liberate the Hamas. They've talked about 1 million martyrs will march toward Jerusalem. They want Jerusalem to be the capital of a Palestinian state. You know, you're dealing with issues that are going to be very problematic. Bible prophecies about Jerusalem. Jerusalem will be a cup of trembling, it says in Zechariah 12, verse 2, to the surrounding peoples when they try to lay siege on Judah and Jerusalem. And then it goes on to say in Zechariah 12, verse 5 and 6, that the captains of Judah, the governors of Judah, read that as the IDF, will be like a fire pan, and they will be like fiery torches to all the surrounding peoples on the right hand and the left. Those are Psalm 83 peoples. It's going to be a real real bloodbath over there probably very soon.
And I believe, and then, of course, the other thing that Bill brings out is that America, the mightiest nation in the world, our home, America is not mentioned in scriptures, and if it is, well, it's mentioned rather obliquely, and he lists all the various places where it could be mentioned, because my personal firm belief is that it is the reference to Babylon and the fact that the when this occurs, why, of course, Babylon is the center of all finance and trade in the world, and of course, to me, that is New York City, and alas, Babylon. And certainly the merchants of the world weep because they no longer can buy and sell. Could something happen to America in the not-too-distant future? We'll be back in a moment.
Your body is composed of literally trillions of cells. Cells are the building blocks of energy and performance for your health and for the life you want to live. Nutritional Therapeutics, a trusted manufacturer of vitamin supplements, understands that when cells aren't operating at optimum levels, one of the immediate signs is an increase in fatigue. Propax is a daily multiple vitamin enhanced with our proprietary formula called NT Factor. Less fatigue equals more natural energy. Propax with NT Factor addresses cellular damage and gives you health from nature, energy from science. Call today at 1-800-982-9158. Try ProPax with NT Factor. Call 1-800-982-9158. Order yours today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure, or prevent any disease.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it. Taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging. Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now 1-866-405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
Two seven.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bill brings out very vividly in his book the fact that America is not mentioned in prophecy. Well, there, some people think we might be the rivers of Tarshish or the have been Babylon, and he actually gives 10 biblical prophecies that certainly where America may be mentioned, but America is not a dominant force. Something is going to happen to America, and I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen, that something has already happened to America, and very difficult times lie ahead. But of course, Bill's point is well made. He thinks that God put America here for a purpose. One of those purposes was to help in the establishment of the Jewish nation. One was to be a haven for the Jewish people, and we have more people living here in America today than they have in Israel. I think the second largest nation concentration of Jews is in France, with about something over 400,000. But certainly the third reason America was created was to take the gospel to the whole world, and we have. We've sent missionaries out, and we're sending missionaries out all over the world today. But it is Bill's contention, and I agree with him totally, that something major is going to happen to America. Would that be a fair appraisal?
Well, that's something must happen if that's why we're hard to find in the Bible. That's the concern of the scholars. That's my concern. Something happens to this country where we slide from our superpower status. And what I was emphasizing just a moment ago is that I was making the comparison that the British Empire was the world empire, one of the greatest empires ever to exist. And they had the call sovereignly to reestablish the nation of Israel. And they were going to do that in 1917, after World War One. The Lord Balfour Declaration was going to give them a huge chunk of land, but they failed to do this. In 1922, the British Empire held sway over about 458 million people, about one-fifth of the world's population at the time, and it covered more than 33,700,000 kilometers, which was about a quarter of the Earth's total land area.
The sun never sat on the British Empire. In other words, it was all over the world, and you're absolutely right. It was the greatest force the world had ever seen, and now it's a second-rate nation.
They failed. They failed to do God's sovereign purpose, which was to establish the Jewish state, and thus subjected to the Jews to the Holocaust. And my concern for America now, being that we are called to be a safe haven for the Jews and to rebirth the Jewish state and to be a protectorate, a strong shoulder of support for Israel to exist today, especially in light of the confrontations we've spoken about that are going to be forthcoming, Psalm 83 and Ezekiel 38, we have a call to duty to be a strong blessing to Israel. People were told in Genesis 12, 2 and 3 that those that bless Abraham, that would be through Isaac, Jacob had 12 sons, the 12 tribes of Israel, the Jewish people today, that those who bless Israel would be blessed, those who curse Israel would be cursed. That's God's foreign policy to the Gentile nations established 4,000 years ago. It's still in place. America needs to bless Israel. And my concern stands that America has a role in Psalm 83. When those Arabs come to confederate, to wipe Israel off the map, we need to be on the right side of that line in the Middle East sand, and we need to be supporting Israel.
Well, I think people have to understand that it was American pressure on Israel that made them give up Gaza, and that was a terrible mistake. America is putting terrible pressure on Israel today to give up parts of the West Bank. And suddenly it really forced them to give back so much of the land that they had taken in the 67 and 73 wars. And believe me, there are people in Washington, D.C. who do not like Israel. They may not come out and say that publicly, but they really don't want Israel. They'd like to see it simply submerged and become part of this, just another nation over there, but not playing a major part in what's going on. And I believe God has a destiny for Israel. I believe it's been there. I believe that this is all foretold in the scriptures. And that's why what is taking place there today is so vitally important. Why don't we talk about those chemical weapons? The third largest chemical weapon force in the world is about ready to fall into the hands of the terrorists there in Syria. And Israel will not allow that. Barack Obama is not going to allow that. And this war over there, Israel is going to have to commit troops into that area. Unless, of course, the United Nations is going to intervene. I don't think they are. I think there's going to be a major war over there. We may be well looking at this Psalm 83 war that Bill talks so eloquently or writes so eloquently about in his book. And we're going to be back here in just a moment here. And I think it's vitally important that this is a very, very important book. It certainly has changed my impression of what's going on over there. And it solved that lingering question I had. None of the nations that are coming up against Israel now are the nations described in Ezekiel 38 and 39. Is it possible God didn't know it was going to happen? Well, I don't believe that for 1 minute. I believe God does certainly determine the affairs of men. I've seen his influence in my life, in my wife's life, in the lives of those I've been close to. And we'll be back in a moment with Bill Salas.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley. And most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden, all heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4 to 6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Longevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid, then is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Longevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Hold that thought. And Chris Bill is saying that there's going to be three wars. And the first one, he believes, is the Psalm 83 war. The second is the Ezekiel 38 and 39 war. And go right ahead.
And the third one will be, of course, all the nations of the world will be gathered together in the Battle of Armageddon, the campaign of Armageddon, and that happens at the very end of time in the tribulation period. So Israel comes under quite a bit of attack. There will actually be a final genocidal attempt by the Antichrist against Israel. But I don't want to go too far out on the timeline just yet, because my point I'm making is that the Israeli Defense Forces today, when you look at their purposes prophetically, they're not involved in Ezekiel 38 and 39. It's God who defeats the Russian-Iranian that invasion, Ezekiel 38 and 39. They're not involved in the Armageddon battle. They're fleeing for their lives at that point in time. That's the mass of all the world armies coming against Israel.
But what you're saying, of course, is that God intervenes and saves Israel at that time.
Yeah.
I think it's so important today. I mean, basically, if you look and see what happened in the 67 war and the 73 war, where Israel fought their neighbors, those battles really don't make any sense. Israel should have lost those wars. I think God was there, and I think God intervened and preserved Israel in 67. I think God intervened and preserved Israel in 73. And I think we're going to have another war in the very near future. And, well, I think the only way that certainly the IDF will win was with God's help, but the IDF will be there fighting. And certainly, but, of course, the interesting thing about the Ezekiel 38, 39, and the Battle of Armageddon War is that God really is the dominant force there that really does it, and certainly not the Israel force with the help of God. Would that be a fair estimate, do you think?
Well, absolutely. There's three different ways that these wars are defeated. The first war, the Israeli Defense Forces defeat the Psalm 83 Arab Confederates. And I point out a plethora of scriptures that point that out, that the idea exists today in fulfillment of Bible prophecy.
But if you look at it purely logically, I mean, how could little Israel, you know, it's just a tiny nation, stand up against Egypt and against Syria and against all those terrorists there, and then against all of the Lebanon, and certainly then, of course, Iraq and Saudi Arabia are going to be drawn into this, and all the Palestinians. And the Palestinians have a military force, powerful military force, that we've built for them. We're funding the Palestinian army that is going to be used against Israel. We brought Morsi to power in Egypt, and we're funding, and we're giving them money, and we're giving them planes, we're giving them all the things that they need to go to war with Israel, and then we're funding Israel as well. We're funding both sides. We're funding certainly the people there, the rebels in Syria. Of course, Russia is financing Assad, but then who is funding Russia? Why, we are. Who built their oil wells for Russia? Who certainly put in their natural gas wells? Russia today is the largest producer of oil and of natural gas in the world, and we drill the wells for them, ladies and gentlemen. In other words, we create our enemies, and then, of course, we go to war with them. But go right ahead.
Well, you're right, and I think the point that we don't want to undervalue is that it is the Lord that will uphold Israel. And the IDF, its rise to power from refugees out of the Holocaust to the number 10 world-ranked army presently today, the strongest army in the Middle East, the closest one to them is Egypt, ranked 16. Saudi Arabia would be the next, and then they're ranked 26 among world armies, has been an empowerment of the Lord, much like Gideon was empowered with his 300 men to defeat 120,000 Midianites. A very case in point that Asaph alludes to when he petitions God in Psalm 83 of how to deal with this onslaught, this Confederate effort of the Arabs. He points to the book of Judges, chapters 4 through 8, and those historic battles where the Lord empowered the Israeli defense forces of those days when Gideon destroyed the Midianites, who had oppressed them for 7 years, and they did an end to 300 men kill 120,000 Midianites, and the Midianites ceased to ever oppress Israel again. And then the other example they allude to in verse 10 and 11 is the Canaanites. They'd oppressed the Israelis for 20 years, but the prophetess Deborah at that time commanded Barak that the Lord was going to deliver them, and they defeated the Canaanites, who ceased to ever oppress them again. And that's going to be the resolve when the Israeli Defense Forces win this war, in my estimation. The Arabs will cease to ever oppress them again. And I had an opportunity, I speak quite a bit in, across the country, I had an opportunity before General Shimon Aram, who was retired. He recently passed away in May of 2012. Now, he was an Israeli general who fought in 1948, 1967, 1973, and he brings forward the point that, especially in 1948, when they were refugees out of the Holocaust, the enemies that came after them, Egypt and Syria and Jordan and many more Arab countries, immediately came after them with advanced fighter jets and tanks, and all the Israelis had was a few private planes. They opened the cockpit and strategically dropped hand grenades on their enemy, and they won that war. There is no reason they should have won that war. It was the Lord who empowered them to win that war, and every army, every war since, they have become a better and better army.
Now, who is it who made that point?
General Shimon Aram.
Okay, I'm not acquainted with him, but you're absolutely right. I mean, if you look at the history of the 48 war and the 67 war and the 73 war, Israel never should have won any of those wars. They were outnumbered. The other side had, you know, all sorts of sophisticated weapons and planes and tanks, and yet Israel won those three wars. Go right ahead.
Well, and Ezekiel 37:10 tells us that Israel will become an exceedingly great army. And the point I was trying to make earlier is that the Israeli defense forces do not, they're not relevant in the Ezekiel 38-39 battle because it's God who stops that. And they're not relevant in the Armageddon battle when the Antichrist is coming against the Jews because we're told in Isaiah 63 that a faithful remnant of Jews beckon the return of Jesus Christ. They recognize he's the Messiah during this Holocaust scenario they'll be going through then in the tribulation. And Jesus returns to Edom, it says, single-handedly, mighty to save, with blood-stained garments, and he destroys the Antichrist in the Armageddon campaign. So the Israeli defense forces, they exist in fulfillment of Bible prophecy, but not for those purposes, the purposes of defending the nation against the Arabs. And I point out the scriptures that point that out. For instance, Obadiah 1, verse 18, the house of Jacob will be aflame. The house of Joseph will fire, rather. The house of Joseph will be aflame, but the house of Esau shall be stubble, and there shall be no survivors left of the house of Esau. That would be the IDF going against the Palestinians and their cohort in this Psalm 83 war, and Israel wins, and the prognosis of the Palestinians is not good. The house of Esau. Esau was Jacob's twin brother. He founded the Edomites, fathered the Edomites. They are represented by the Palestinians. They have ethnical representation in them today. And it says, no survivor shall remain in the house of Esau. Ezekiel 25:14, vengeance on Edom, again, the house of Esau, by the hand of my people Israel. I'd like to tell the listeners, look, we worship a loving God who sent Jesus Christ, his only begotten Son, to die for our sins, that whoever would believe in him would not perish but have everlasting life. That's in John 3:16. The Lord loves the Arabs. He does not want them to be cursed. He does not want them to come curse Israel. God has plans for Israel in these end times. He would rather have a relationship with every Arab and every Jew and everybody. But if they're going to come try to stop his end time plans to uphold his holy name through Israel in the end times, and if they're going to try to curse Israel, they are going to come under the scrutiny of Genesis 12:3. They must be cursed, it says. If you try to curse Israel, you must be cursed. And God does have big plans stand for Israel in the end times. We're told in Ezekiel 39:7, I will make my holy name known in the midst of my people Israel. And I will not let them profane my holy name any more than the nation shall know that I am the Lord, the Holy One in Israel. That is what the statement that will be made and echoed when he stops the Gog and Magog invasion of Ezekiel 38-39. So this is big stuff, Stan. These are big prophetic wars that are coming. They are game changers. They will change economies. They will change world environments. And one event will happen. Psalm 83, I believe, will happen soon. And on its heels, not too far between, you'll probably have the bigger invasion coming with Ezekiel 38-39.
Okay, before we go on, I would like you to go ahead, get your webpage out, and tell people how they can get copies of your book. Okay.
Well, thank you so much, Stan, and it's such a treat to be on your program. And the website is prophecydepot.com. That's Prophecy Depot, like Home Depot.com. And you can get my books, all my books there. The Psalm 83 book is my new book. It's become a bestseller on Amazon. It's only been out about 3 weeks. And it comes with a teaching DVD directly taken out of the book, 3 hours of teaching on the future for American Bible prophecy, Psalm 83 or Ezekiel 38, which is the next media news headline, and the third teaching is the roots of the Middle East conflict. What is this ancient hatred that the Jews are still facing with today with those surrounding Arab countries? And you can also get my book on Amazon. So that's prophecydepot.com.
Can you spell out so people would know exactly how to get to your website?
Yes, prophecy, P-R-O-P-H-E-C-Y,
mm-hmm.
Depot, D-E-P-O-T.
Prophecy Depot.
prophecydepot.com.
Prophecydepot.com. And this is a fascinating book, and it really is. You know, exciting things are happening. We have a good friend who is over there in Israel today, is working as a missionary, and she reports that there are so many of the Palestinians are coming to be Christians. And of course, she works with the Palestinians, and they're looking for answers, and she baptizes many of them there in the Jordan River. She's busy all the time. I mean, certainly bringing Palestinians to know the Lord and even Christians to know the Lord. We have a very close friend, he's one of our producers, whose cousin is is Jewish, but he's a Jewish Christian. But he felt that he was supposed to go to Israel at this time, and he's moved from the United States, where he had a comfortable job and was very prosperous, and he's moved over to Israel, and this is what we hear, is that Jews from all over the world are going to Israel. Now, why would anybody want to go to Israel when Israel's on the verge of being plunged into a terrible conflict and a terrible war? And everybody over there has a gas mask now, or most of them do, and there's a very real danger of a chemical war or biological war there in Israel. Why would Jews from all over the world be directing people, and there are thousands of them and thousands of them who are going to Israel now? It doesn't make any sense logically, but then we're not dealing with logic. We're dealing with God's hand, and I believe God's hand's in everything going on over there. What are your thoughts, Bill?
Well, absolutely. You know, the Lord said the fact that Israel exists today and that Jews are populating Israel today and still populating Israel amidst the backdrop of what you just said, the dangerous areas that and the threats that are posed on Israel, is also a Bible prophecy. And I point out in the book the numerous prophecies that talk about that the Lord would bring the Jews out of the nations of the world and make Aliyah, they would make Aliyah into the land of Israel. And we've got a lot of specifics. They would come in Ezekiel 36, verses 24, in a condition of unbelief. In other words, they wouldn't even be believing in necessarily in God, and that's the case today. Many of the Jews, they certainly don't believe in Jesus, although a few do, but a lot of them don't even believe in God. I mean, they're Old Testament Jehovah. I've talked about them coming out of a Holocaust condition in Ezekiel 37, verse 11 and 12. Talks about them being in the latter years in Ezekiel 38, coming upon the mountains of Israel. And there's a whole bunch more that I point out. That's the thing. There's a Zionistic inclination in the Jewish people. In other words, they want to come back into the land of Israel. I think that's supernatural myself. Now, and God seated within them. But the fact of the matter is there are still a lot of Jews that don't want to go over there right now. They're comfortable with their portfolios in America. And Israel is a threat. You know, it's threatened by many things. But I do believe after Israel wins that war, after Psalm 83, massive volume will occur, because there'll be the walls can come down in Israel, and there'll be opportunity over there. They'll be freed from Arab terror, torment, and threat, and I believe many Jews will make Aliyah over there. So even more will populate Israel, I believe, in the near future.
And Chris, there's growing anti-Semitism here in the United States, and I run into it all the time doing what I do. And people that can make up all these wonderful reasons why we should hate the Jews, and they're responsible for everything, and a lot of the people who are part of what I call the movement of Jewish, but that doesn't mean it's a Jewish movement at all. I mean, certainly the vast majority of the Jews have no idea what's going on. But one reason I think that more Jews are going to move over to Israel is because terrible things are going to happen in America, and we're going to have some very real economic problems here. And as a result, many Jews will think, well, maybe things will be better in Israel. Have you considered that possibility, Bill?
I certainly have, Stan. You know, what we're talking about with these prophecies, these are game-changing prophecies. We are dealing with an economic crisis that's global, and our country is hoping to find a recovery here, but we are, you know, we're $16 trillion plus in debt. And the last thing we need, or the world economies need, is a major war in the Middle East, a war of epic biblical proportion, and that's exactly what we're talking about. So if all of a sudden Israel hammers down a big war over there and wins, because they have to, not that they want to, you know, just be aggressive, but have a self-defense. And that seems to be the context of Psalm 83, that the Arabs form a confederacy to wipe Israel off. It's not vice versa. Israel simply defends itself. And all of a sudden, world economies, let's say the oil card is played in the Middle East, and world economies are affected by it, and they spiral downward as a result of this. The Jews get blamed, the anti-Semitism in America. There's not much more opportunity economically to enhance their portfolios. Of course, the logical thing would be, let's go over to Israel. Let's go to be with our fellow ethnic group over there. Let's go over there where they're trying to expand, take some territory, and burgeon into a much bigger, safer nation, a regional powerhouse. That's the subtitle of my book, Psalm 83, The Missing Prophecy Revealed, How Israel Becomes the Next Media Superpower. And no one's thinking about this right now, Stan. This is what the Bible appears to be saying, that this little tiny Israel of today is about to expand like it did in 1967 when it tripled its size, like David did 3,000 years ago, King David, like Joshua did 3,300 years ago. The Jews win wars. They spread out their elbows. They incrementally grab land. It makes their borders more defensible. And Genesis 15:18 tells us that the Lord gave Abraham land from the river of Egypt, the Nile, to the river Euphrates, to Iraq and Syria. So they can spread out and take land, and they are notoriously have done that in the past.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what's going to happen, but I will tell you this is a very provocative book. I will tell you that something big is afoot over there. You're not reading about it. Everything here is a diversion. Everything is illusion and delusion. And they're keeping our attention focused on unimportant things, and then one day we're suddenly going to find out that this war over in that part of the world is flared up, and is either Israel or America or both are going to be involved. And I do believe that there's another war. Or are there going to be terrible ramifications here at home? And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, as it says in the Bible, in one day Babylon was destroyed.
Your body is composed of literally trillions of cells. Cells are the building blocks of energy and performance for your health and for the life you want to live. Nutritional Therapeutics, a trusted manufacturer of vitamin supplements, understands that when cells aren't operating at optimum levels, one of the immediate signs is an increase in fatigue. Propax is a daily multiple vitamin enhanced with our proprietary formula called NT Factor. Less fatigue equals more natural energy. Propax with NT Factor addresses cellular damage and gives you health from nature, energy from science. Call today at 1-800-982-9158. Try Propax with NT Factor. Call 1-800-982-9158. Order yours today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure, or prevent any disease. There is a disturbing trend here in these United States that is progressing unnoticed and without constraint. From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we have seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. Our founding fathers designed our three-part governmental system to have checks and balances upon each other. Each branch of the government has now taken upon itself power that was never intended for it to have. The judicial branch in particular needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. There you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. Judicialreformnow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
From the mountains, through the prairies, through the ocean.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I do hope you enjoyed Bill DeSalvis' book. I think he's got a great deal of wisdom in this book. I think it's well worthwhile reading. A lot of it, certainly, we don't know the answers, but I do know I can promise one thing, and that is some very major events are going to happen in this next couple of months. Certainly, it's going to be an exciting time to know the Lord, and if you don't have a personal relationship with him, why, you look at least into the claims. And if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it and read it. If you don't have the funds, go to our website, radioliberty.com. Go to videos and then scroll down. And the first video is called The Brotherhood of Darkness. It's the talk I gave from which the book came. I gave the talk. It was on a DVD. We sent it out. Somebody saw it and said, we want to publish your book. And that's how the book got published. And, well, anyway, the rest is history. There are between 50 and 100,000 copies out. Certainly, the book is available if you can get it. And then if you'd like to get a case of the books, we'll be offering for about 2 more weeks, and then we're going to cut that off. But you can get them at a ridiculously low cost, and you can get the book out far and wide. In fact, we just got a call this evening wanting to know what it was going to cost to send a case of books to Hong Kong. Certainly, we had one request for books from England. And, of course, the book is going all over the world by the case, because individual copies have gone all over. But if you'd like to get a case of the books, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And just, we hope that you'll go to our webpage. You'll look at the various items that we have there. If you haven't heard my talk on Agenda 21, the Covert Plan, it'll give you an overview of what this is going on and the spiritual forces that are at work. Now, I do want to mention that I will be giving that talk. I'll be in Long Beach on next Sunday, a week from Sunday. That's the 3rd of March. I'll be speaking there at the Long Beach Convention Center. I'll be there on the 1st and 2nd as well. We're going to have a booth. And certainly, if you're in the Long Beach area, I'll be there at the booth starting about noon on Friday, and I'll be there Saturday and most of Sunday, except when I'm giving a talk. There are about 4 people that talking at the same time, but they usually get an excellent turnout. It's the Health Freedom Expo. The Health Freedom Expo at a Long Beach Convention Center, and you can just go down there and show up. And, well, if you're there, I'd love to meet you. Then, of course, we hope that you, if you're out there in the listening audience, you'll want to get our material, for instance, on the geoengineering. We've got an excellent DVD and a 4-tape set on geoengineering. And basically, they're spraying the atmosphere. Why do you think we're having all this strange weather? Why are we having a drought in the center part of the United States? We've got certainly DVDs on weather as a weapon. We've got books on weather as a weapon. And then we've got a book on HAARP, both written by our friend Jerry Smith, who died at a very, very young age, shortly after writing those books. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on HAARP, a CD set on weather modification. They do know how to modify our weather. There's no question at all. But the best single thing you could get right now would be the 4-CD set on geoengineering and the DVD on geoengineering. And they're poisoning our food, whether it be aspartame or MSG or the bisphenol that is in all the plastics, or simply the recombinant bovine growth hormone milk, most of the milk we have, the genetically, all of these things are produce cancer, they alter fertility. They know what they're doing. This is true of GMO foods. We've got a 4-CD set on GMO foods. You have to understand what they're doing, ladies and gentlemen. They're poisoning our children. And they're poisoning us as well. And this is one reason why the fertility rates are falling. But nobody's going to tell you that. They're going to tell you people have decided not to have as many children. Ladies and gentlemen, they're poisoning the fertility. That's why the fertility rate's falling. But they don't want the American people to know. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. That we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, my ministry, for our provision and our protection, and we'll be back in a moment with William Creek. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's got to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and hopefully, very, very shortly, they're going to be the views of William Grigg. And, of course, William, those of you who don't know him, is one of the most articulate people we have in the conservative movement. Of course, we have most of the really articulate people in the conservative movement on our programs, and we're so fortunate and blessed to have people like William. But William was formerly the senior editor of the New American Magazine. He was editor for a time of the Republic Magazine. He's certainly had an opportunity to speak nationally and internationally. He's traveled throughout the world. He writes prolifically. He writes certainly articles. You can find them regularly on Lou Rockwell, and he has his own blog. He writes, of course, the Radio Liberty newsletter and my monthly newsletter. I've been able to get William to write that. I really don't have the time. I'm trying to put together one final book now, and I really feel it's you will learn more from William Grigg's of writings. His last couple of newsletters, I think, have just been outstanding. If you take our newsletter, why, of course, you will appreciate that. You can subscribe to the newsletter or join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and get the newsletter. But if you can't afford that, why, of course, we post our material on our website, and so you can go to radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and go to the section under letters, and you'll find the letters by William Grigg there, and of course, that monthly newsletters. Of course, you can go back and read my newsletters going back to the mid-1990s. And of course, I think there's a lot of wonderful material there. Much of this we put into little booklets, and there you can get those, read about those at our website, or certainly get our catalog, and they're all listed. But of course, you need to get an understanding of what's going on. You need to understand that most of what you think you know isn't true. The media is controlled, and basically the tragedy is most people don't understand that television and even much of talk radio is designed to actually control our reality. And we've got some wonderful conservative commentators, and they're entertaining, and they put out so much good information, but they're paid a great deal of money not to tell you all the rest of the story. Now, nobody pays us a lot of money. In fact, we lose money all the time. We've got a tremendous amount of money we put into this ministry ourselves, our retirement funds, but we've done this because, well, we feel we've been led to do this, and so we don't get paid. My wife doesn't get paid. But what we do want you to do, we want you to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And short of a great revival in America, why, America is going to be destroyed. And we may very well find this happening much, much sooner than many people believe and understand. What we're trying to do is warn people what lies ahead. If we can bring them into a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ, fine. And if we can't, well, hopefully down the line they will understand, they'll remember what they've heard, and hopefully, of course, they will then embrace our Lord Jesus Christ. Well, right now, let's get to William Grigg. Hi, William. How are we doing?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing well. Thanks again for having me on your program. It's always a pleasure.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you. And what are we going to be talking about this evening?
Well, Dr. Stan, we have to talk about the Great Unraveling. That's the subject that's going to be dominating our conversations into the foreseeable future. It's something that has been long anticipated, and you and I both believe something that's been prophesied in many respects.
All right, fine. Well, then, of course, we'll be talking about the Great Unraveling, and we'll be talking about this in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. But, ladies and gentlemen, the wonderful world we've lived in, I'm afraid, is coming to an end. We're heading into very, very difficult times in America, but fewer people understand. William, go right ahead.
The thing that we need to understand about the Great Unraveling is that it begins, of course, with a moral unraveling. The institutions reflect the inner morality of the people who occupy those institutions. You like to say that at the root of things in discussing politics and economics and culture is the fact that people have forgotten or ignored or rebelled against the eternal laws of morality, beginning, of course, with an understanding of our relationship to the Creator. And out of that understanding, of course, we should embrace the Golden Rule, the ironclad, always relevant, ineluctable moral law of the universe, and human conduct specifically is the Golden Rule. And one of the things that I have said and continue to say is that the only alternative to living by the Golden Rule is to be ruled by the iron fist. And just in the last couple of weeks, we've seen a dreadful escalation on the part of those who presume to rule us, and those, of course, who have an ambition of ruling everybody in terms of the use of arbitrary violence and utter lawlessness. And I'm so struck by the fact, and we discussed this last week, I think it's worth further examination, that we have moved the conversation, we've seen the conversation, the controlled dialectic, move within the last month and a half from a point at which there was no acknowledgement of the arbitrary and tyrannical policy of executive-ordered murder by remote-controlled drones to a state of affairs now where it's being openly discussed in the controlled media and in the political realm in such a way that we're given two false alternatives. We either have arbitrary and unaccountable exercise of executive power to command people to kill others by way of drones, including U.S. citizens, and the Obama administration being coy and disingenuous as to the question of whether this can be done on the soil of the United States itself. It's something that's been done overseas. They adamantly refuse a candid answer as to whether this is the sort of a power that they believe the president's entitled to authorize domestically. But that's one alternative. And the other alternative is to have a globe-bestriding military machine where we have serried rows of infantry and full deployment of air power and sea power to accomplish the same kinds of objectives. Supposedly, drone killing is more moral because it's more selective. And as a result of being selective, of course, it's completely arbitrary. You've got one official who's advised by a group of anonymous and completely unaccountable people in the fashion of the Star Chamber Court.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought.
During executioner.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is simply talking about the fact that the president now has the right to kill anyone he wants to. Now, he has the right to kill American citizens, order them to be killed. We've seen this taking place in Yemen, a gentleman, an American citizen, who has never been indicted, who's never been convicted of any crime. He is accused of having been a terrorist, or at least of being very critical of what America has been doing as far as the Islamic countries. And although he's an American citizen, drones were sent to kill him. And then, of course, a few weeks later, his son was over there, a 16-year-old son, not a terrorist at all, looking for his father, concerned about his father, and his son and a friend were having dinner, and they set a drone, and they killed them, too. This was an American citizen, a 16-year-old boy. And, of course, there's been some people saying, well, really, the president shouldn't be killing people. Well, basically, this, if it's going to be done, it should be done with the consent of Congress or certainly by the judges. But one man does not have the right to determine who will live and who will die. We have a judicial system. And basically, we ought to at least have people indicted or at least convicted of a crime, even in absentia. But, of course, this isn't the way it is, too. In fact, President Obama has said, well, they've decided that they're not going to give Congress the legal opinions that give him the right to kill people. But if he can kill American citizens in Yemen, can he kill American citizens who are critical of America here in the United States? Well, they have legal opinions on all of this, but they won't let anybody see the legal opinions because, of course, it might jeopardize national security. And everything is concealed under the idea of national security. We're here to defend you, ladies and gentlemen. That's why we've killed all those people over there in the Near East. That's why President Obama, certainly on December 10th, of 2010 on 60 Minutes. It was being interviewed by Steve Croft. And President Obama was going to add an additional 30,000 American troops to Afghanistan. And we already had 60,000. That would bring us up to 90,000. And Steve Croft said, "Oh, but Mr. President, there's only 50 members of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Why are you adding another 30,000 troops? There's only 50 members of Al-Qaeda." And without simply batting an eye, President Obama said, but they are terrorists. They're plotting against America. And my job is to defend America. So they sent in an additional 30,000 troops. But, of course, I'm sure he uses that rationale to justify killing people who've never been indicted, people who've never been convicted of a crime, who just happen to be American citizens, and then they're innocent children. Well, go ahead, William.
Well, one of the things about what you just described, Dr. Stan, that I find striking is that we're supposed to believe that there is something akin to omnipotence exercised by these troglodytes living overseas in Afghanistan. And that somehow these people plotting in distant deserts and in redoubts and caves and mountainous places of refuge supposedly threaten the existence of Americans living thousands of miles away in a society that is technologically much more advanced, with a government that's prohibitively stronger than any other government on the face of the earth. We could supposedly be brought to a point of existential terror by people who are living in Afghanistan, the border region of Pakistan, and so forth.
Of course, all 50 of them. All 50 of them. Right.
It's a penetrable falsehood and something that's visible on its face. The thing that I find interesting, however, is that if you take a look at the way the strategy actually works, it's almost as if the logic would run as follows. There are only 50 of them left. Well, we have to do something to recruit more. And the best way to recruit more, of course, is to rain death from the skies on places such as the border regions of Pakistan or Yemen, or elsewhere, in order to kill as many innocent people as possible, thereby creating the rancor that will coalesce into terrorism. It seems to me that that is the intention here, because anything else, of course, is too ridiculous to contemplate.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. I was reading an article just this evening in the New York Times, and basically they were saying, of course, that there's been some concern about what's going on in Afghanistan. You remember the President Obama had promised to pull most of the troops out this year and the rest of them out next year, but they've suddenly decided that there are real problems over there, and so we're going to have to maintain a sizable military force in Afghanistan. Afghanistan, about 353,000 troops. 353,000 troops. Now, you have to understand that they're going to pull half of the American troops out, but is that half of the 90,000 we had? Is that half of the 40 or 50,000 we have today? Nobody really tells you. Of course, there are going to be NATO troops, there are going to be all of the contract positions, and then there are going to be the massive Afghan army and Afghan police force that we have installed there. And of course, there are 50 members of Al-Qaeda over there. Mm-hmm. Probably most of them are dead now, but that doesn't matter. Well, we have to have those troops over there, 353,000 people there, troops stationed, more or less permanently, at least until the end of 2015 and maybe to 2018, to defend America. Go right ahead.
And of course, they're doing nothing to defend the United States of America. They're not defending the borders of the contiguous states. They're not defending the far-flung Hawaiian archipelago or even the colonial territories in the Pacific and the Caribbean. They're not providing security on the shipping lanes, which was one of the reasons why the Constitution mandated that Congress maintain a Navy, was to protect the commercial shipping that would define a commercial republic. They're not doing anything of that sort when they're tromping around Helmand Province and elsewhere in Afghanistan, which has historically been the graveyard of empires, and that's a role that it's serving now. You take a look at what's happening to our economy, and in terms of the strategic overstretch of the United States government, Afghanistan is fulfilling its time-honored function of being that arena in which empires that have outlived their vitality go to die. It's happened since time immemorial. I mean, not even Alexander of Macedon could put Afghanistan firmly under his feet, and since that time defeated empires such as the British and the Soviets, and now, of course, the empire that's headquartered in Washington, D.C., is finding that there are abrupt limits to its power. But one of the things that happens as the result of this type of a venture, just as was foreseen by James Madison and the other founders, is that you have a consolidation of power in the executive branch in a way that is lethal. And in principle, if only intermittently in execution, the powers arrogated by the presidency under Bush and now under Obama, they've been vastly expanded under Obama, which is something that I didn't think was possible. In principle, if only intermittently in practice, those powers are Stalinist. And I use that term specifically. Joseph Stalin's name has become a hiss and a byword and a proverb because he arbitrarily killed people for reasons that were often inscrutable, that were not subject to public review. And in exercising that killing function, he was lauded and cosseted and protected by people who I believe were motivated primarily by terror. It's said that when Stalin died and most likely went to hell in 1953, that around his deathbed were gathered members of the intelligence organs, the security organs of the Soviet Union, who were living in terror of what Mr. Stalin could do in the event that he recovered. And some of them, of course, sensed that they were on the equivalent of the kill list that Joseph Stalin maintained and constantly updated. And he appeared to die, and breath left his body, and one of them immediately began swearing in a moment of catharsis about what a horrible creature Joseph Stalin was and how the world was best rid of him. It turned out that he hadn't died. He briefly recovered, and for a second, the light of pure refined malice radiated from his eyes, and the individual who had been caught bad-mouthing the dear leader, Uncle Joe, found himself paralyzed with terror because the monster wasn't dead, but then he expired. It was just a very brief premonitory death rattle that had taken place. And in that fleeting instant, I don't doubt for a second that the man who let slip his candid opinion of Joseph Stalin really believed that he was going to be killed, even though he was dealing with an enfeebled and fatally stricken tyrant. Still in his death throes, Stalin had that type of capacity to inflict terror in people until he was well gone and genuinely dead. That's the same kind of a situation we have here, once again, in principle, with differing in details and perhaps in degree of depravity. And I'm thinking that because of the way that the discussion over the arbitrary killing function is being framed here. We have Dianne Feinstein, the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, who's being exceptionally cautious about discussing any of this in public. Apparently she and some other members of the congressional leadership have seen some of these seven anonymous, unsigned legal findings that purportedly set out a legal defense for something that's patently illegal, but they've not been able to discuss in public what they've seen, and they've not seen all of them. But she has suggested, along with Senator Angus King, who's an independent junior senator from Maine, if I remember correctly, that a court be set up on the model of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court. The FISA court, which has been in operation for a number of decades now, will ratify with a search warrant after the fact decisions that are taken to engage in covert surveillance of people who are considered to be foreign agents in the United States. You get a warrant, but you can get a warrant retroactively. They're talking about setting up a tribunal that would function the same way with respect to assassinations. They want to create an assassination court. Now, think of this for a second. What kind of a country, what kind of a society has a special court, the sole and exclusive purpose of which is to oversee assassinations? That's what we're talking about. So it's perverse on its face. But it gets even worse when you recognize that they would not have in this court any kind of function in terms of authorizing assassinations. They would only be told after the fact that somebody had been targeted by the president for assassination, and after the fact they would ratify what the president had done. So not only is this a court that would preside over assassinations and issue death warrants, it wouldn't issue the death warrants, it would ratify decisions made by the president to murder somebody without due process.
But it would have been going on for a long time,
yeah.
Basically. And if your listeners out there have never heard our 4-CD set on deadly assassins, I actually interview a couple of government assassins. One of them is dead, the other has disappeared. I interviewed the gentleman who tracked down the man who was hired to kill General George Patton. They killed General George Patton. This has been going on for a long time. We'll be right back. So, William, certainly, the thing is, though, that as much as I disliked Barack Obama, I do believe, of course, he is simply the front for the power elite who control this nation, who obviously approve of what he's doing, or they would send him on a trip to Dallas or have him killed, as they've had other presidents and leading politicians killed.
That, I think, is a very safe assumption. He's certainly somebody who is merely a front man, merely a controlled puppet. He's somebody whose strings are being pulled by people who represent the permanent self-replicating elite, and he's the most recent personality to offer a facade of political acceptability or a facade of political consensus on behalf of that power elite. And that power elite, as we pointed out on many occasions, is not defined by the artificial partisan divide between Republican and Democrat. I wish people would somehow transcend those categories and understand that you're dealing with, as I've like to put it, retail outlets, the same wholesale establishment. The biggest difference here about what Barack Obama is doing is that given his baggage, his ideological baggage, and the fact that he is a polarizing figure on account of the way that he has presented himself and allowed himself to be presented in quasi-messianic terms, that's something that's very useful in terms of generating the type of partisan friction that sets off more heat than light. And I think that whoever succeeds Barack Obama as president, most likely from the Republican side of the aisle, is going to advance this narrative even further, that is to say, the consolidation of executive power. And it's useful. The existence of that power is what is useful to the power elite. It's not that it's invested in a given personality. And the fact that you have both Republicans and the Democrats in the Senate right now contending with each other to be more obsequious and sycophantic in the service of executive power tells you everything you know about the fact that this is a completely fraudulent game. It's a charade. I'd mentioned Dianne Feinstein. I mentioned Angus King. I need to mention Nancy Pelosi in this connection. Of course, she's a singularly disagreeable personality to discuss. But as was the case with the so-called Affordable Care Act debate a number of years ago, back in 2009 for the most part, Nancy Pelosi at the time as Speaker of the House was insisting that we wouldn't be able to see the legislation until after it had been passed. We had to pass the legislation in order to see what's in it. We're finding out now, of course, that there are all manner of ugly things that were buried within the trackless waste of verbiage that constitute the Obamacare legislation. But she said exactly the same kind of thing with respect to the use of drones domestically to carry out executive assassination of targeted U.S. citizens. She said that we would only find out after the fact that the president is authorized to do this. We'll have to wait until he kills somebody in order to understand that this has been a policy option all along. That would be the function of this assassination court. That's something that the Democrats are proposing. They want to use, that is to say, to pervert the powers found in Article 3 of the Constitution to create a court, the sole function of which would be to rubber stamp an executive decision to murder a U.S. citizen. That's the Democratic alternative. Now, the Republican alternative in this controlled and utterly utterly phony debate, this Ersatz dialectic, is that even the creation of a court of that kind that would only exist to ratify the president's decision, even a court of that kind would be an impermissible infringement on the supposed commander-in-chief authority of the president of the United States. So I think in that sense...
Hold that thought, and we'll be right back. Okay, Sidney. William is simply talking about what's going on, and certainly the fact that the president now has certainly a total power to kill anyone he wants to. Now, he says he will not use his power against American citizens in the United States. He made that statement, but he's already killed a couple overseas, knowing full well it's really, what a beautiful statement that is. I can guarantee I will not use that power, you know, to assassinate an American citizen in the United States. But he's done it overseas. And where was the outcry? It was just muted in its silence, deafening in its silence. Where is the media pointing out that this is murder? You do not have the right as president to murder somebody. There's nothing in the Constitution that gives you the right to murder anybody, certainly without a trial. And now, of course, they're saying, well, we'll have a court maybe look at it after they've murdered it and say it's all right. Go right ahead, William.
Yeah, and the Republicans, of course, are not content with that kind of an arrangement. They're not content with anything except for what you might call the full Stalin. The full Stalin in this instance would be that there is no power beneath that of the creator they refuse to recognize that would limit what a president could do in terms of arbitrary killing of subjects of his government. We can no longer even refer to ourselves as citizens. The government can dispatch us with severe prejudice and do so publicly now. That's the part of this conversation that leaves me somewhat pixelated, Dr. Stan. We've known for decades that the government, of course, employs people to carry out assassinations. That somebody who's not a hopeless ingenue or a naive would believe, would understand, rather, that the government of the United States does this. It's done this for decades, if not centuries. It's done so covertly and, you know, sheathed and swaddled and in deniability. But what's happening now is that this is being discussed in such banal media outlets as USA Today, which is regurgitated a version of the standard line that it's better that we use drones to kill people at a distance, do so arbitrarily, than risk the lives of U.S. military personnel to carry out these same dubious errands. And, of course, that's the way that the controlled argument always functions. We're given two false alternatives. There's no reason at all for U.S. military personnel to be swarming purlieus in Pakistan or various precincts of Mogadishu or invading Yemen to track down people who are perhaps a threat to the government that afflict those countries. The Yemen example is a really good one. We're told that a group calling itself Al-Qaeda in Yemen, or Al-Qaeda in the Arab Peninsula, rather, this group, which is confined entirely to that country and made up of people who are indigenous to that country and that region, that threatens only the government of that country. It's a horrible government, of course. We're supposed to believe that they are a direct threat to the interests of the United States of America. By interests, of course, would not be referring to the interest of the population, the interest of the electorate, but rather the self-defined interests of the clique that runs the government of the United States of America. But what they're doing is they're targeting a despot, a really cheap, sort of down-market version of your classic Arab or African despot is being threatened by an insurgency, the only objective of which is to bring down that government. These are not people who are seeking to propagate Islamic revolution. Even throughout Africa, they just hate the government, the servile tool, the cat's paw of Washington in Yemen. And for the most part, the drone strikes are being carried out in Yemen target people of that kind that have nothing at all to do with jihad, for that matter, in the Near East or in any other section of Africa. For heaven's sake, to the extent that Al-Qaeda is doing any damage in places like Mali and Libya and Syria, it's doing so with the active support of the CIA. There was a horrible car bombing a couple of days ago in Damascus that killed probably somewhere in excess of 200 people, the body count still being compiled. Hundreds were wounded, maybe as many as 1,000. This was carried out by a terrorist group connected to people who are identified as Al-Qaeda, which is a brand name, not an organization. And there was a move in the UN Security Council, which is a body for which I have no respect, of course, by Russia to condemn this terrorist attack, because, of course, it was a terrorist attack, and Russia, for cynical reasons of state, wanted to promote this resolution because they're allied with the Bashar Assad regime in Damascus. The U.S. government blocked that resolution because it wanted to find some way of blaming the incumbent Syrian regime for something that had been carried out by Al-Qaeda-connected terrorists who were supported by the United States.
And I think that is really so important for people to understand. We would not allow this terrorist act to be declared to be a terrorist attack because we're funding the people who are committing this terrorist attack. We're funding terrorism throughout the world. Why are we doing that? Well, if you don't have an enemy, how can you, of course, rally the people behind the government? How can you justify a massive intelligence agency? How can you suddenly justify having our troops stationed all over the world to defend us from the terrorists that we're funding? We'll be back in a moment.
It's love, better not miss it. Right here, you know it's true. It's love, meaning and
William, you go right ahead.
Yeah, we've reached a pretty pass here where in the Security Council of the United Nations, and once again, I've got no brief for the UN or any of its work, but in that setting, the United States government would be running interference for a terrorist act carried out by people who would be, in any other context, identified as Al-Qaeda. Indeed, they are people who are connected with groups that bear that trademark. Running interference for that group in the aftermath of a terrorist attack that killed hundreds of people involving a car bomb. That's what the United States government is doing right now. It's getting precious little attention. And that really, I think, bespeaks the genuine relationship between the government supposedly protecting us, the terrorist groups against whom we're supposedly being protected. They're an asset. They're a foil at the worst. That's what's happening in places, once again, like Yemen and Somalia. Now, Somalia is a horrible, horrible situation precisely because the government of the United States insists on tearing that country to pieces, not letting it recover. But in those countries where Al-Qaeda is treated as an enemy, it's really a quite peripheral and trivial enemy. But where Al-Qaeda is doing things that are genuinely injurious, leading to the deaths of hundreds, usually this is done by people, once again, who are not part of the whatever formal institutional structure of Al-Qaeda exists. They're people who have been recruited by jihadist groups who invoke Al-Qaeda as principle. But where they're really doing damage is because they're getting material support from Washington. And what's going on in Syria is a perfect example of that, where you've got tens of thousands of people who are being killed or injured or driven out of the country in a civil war that really pits two completely disagreeable factions against each other. Assad, of course, is a tyrant and a pretty loathsome human being. The people Washington's supporting to overthrow him are even worse. And the outgrowth of this, the blowback, to use the scientific term of art employed by intelligence analysts, is entirely predictable. You're going to end up with a far greater number of enemies and a far more acute threat that will be parlayed into far more power on behalf of the people who are really in the business of making our life miserable. They're headquartered in Washington, D.C. And they're increasingly extending their reach and influence through their control of local law enforcement, and particularly the federally run fusion centers that the FBI maintains, the Department of Homeland Security is involved in. And it's through those fusion centers, the Joint Terrorism Task Forces, that honeycomb every state and every significant city in this country, that you see these phony terrorist plots being confabulated by the FBI. They go out, they find a...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly William is talking about how all these terrorist attacks, we're being constantly bombarded with talk about all these terrorist attacks and these people want to blow up America. Suddenly, you get some young man from New York City. He wants to, of course, he decides he wants to blow up New York City. So he goes over to Pakistan or Afghanistan, and he gets in touch with some U.S. agents posing as terrorists. They teach him how to build a car bomb. Of course, it's a car bomb that won't explode. So he goes back to New York City, and he gets a car, and he builds a car bomb, and he parks the car there on Times Square. But it's a bomb that's not going to go off. And this is what happens over and over and over again. Usually, of course, some FBI agent goes out posing as a Muslim extremist and talks people into getting involved in a conspiracy to blow up a building or kill Americans one way or another. And suddenly, it's all finance, and they'll even get people to build a bomb. They'll provide the explosives, and they'll teach the people how to build the bomb, and they'll get these people to commit themselves to do it. And they're all contrived, ladies and gentlemen. They're all contrived. If there was really a threat, certainly here in America, we would have had explosives going off in our malls. We would have them going off, certainly at our football games and our basketball games. We'd have them going off in Washington, D.C. There'd be car bombs parked in front of the White House. They're not. Why not? We haven't had one major terrorist attack, other than I think there was a major in the military who actually killed some people there on a military base, but he had actually been in contact with somebody over in the Arab world who'd gone ahead and told him it was perfectly all right to do it. In all probability, that man was a government agent. They want this sort of thing. They've got to convince us that we were at war with terrorism. And yet all of these so-called threatened attacks on America are all aborted before anything happens. Why? Because the people who finance it, the people who put the Muslims up to it, are FBI agents. Go right ahead, William.
Well, FBI agents and, of course, CIA operatives as well. And that's something else that really betokens the continuity between what happened in the Soviet Union under Stalin and what's going on in the USSA today. Is we're living in sort of a proto-Soyuz at very best. If you read Solzhenitsyn's work, and I've been rereading the Gulag Archipelago recently, which of course is this huge and very, very depressing work of what he called literary investigation into the Soviet prison camp system. And an archipelago, of course, is an island chain, and Gulag was, if I remember correctly, a acronym formed from the Russian words that refer to a detention camp for political prisoners. What Solzhenitsyn said is that the vast landmass that was Soviet-era Russia and the near abroad spanned 11 time zones had this island chain, these little clusters of detention facilities that were scattered across the length and breadth of this country and up past the Arctic Circle, places like Kolyma, which was referred to as a frozen Auschwitz by some people who survived that camp. It was a full-blown death camp in Arctic conditions where people were sent out to mine minerals and to cut down timber, and of course people worked to death. But in talking about the nature of that regime and the security organs that defined it, Solzhenitsyn pointed out that the objective was not to protect persons of property, because the government of the Soviet Union didn't believe in property. It denied, of course, the very existence of private property. And the persons who were subject to that government were considered the property of the collective. So they weren't interested in protecting them. They were interested in maintaining order. And in the Soviet Union, you had regularly constituted police bodies that investigated crimes and arrested people for acts that would be considered crimes in any society. That's true of any totalitarian, whether you're talking about Soviet Russia or China or North Korea. If you commit things that are recognizable as crimes, there are people who will probably investigate your offense and arrest you and prosecute you. So these people were put into prison as well, but they were treated better than the political prisoners. But the purpose of the security organ, Solzhenitsyn said, was to create political prisoners. They were interested in creating what were called waves, and waves would be generated with regularity, where suddenly they would be focusing on a given region or a given religious or ethnic group or focusing on people in a certain profession in order to meet quotas of interrogations and arrests and sentencing. And one of the things that he said was that the Soviet KGB at the time was called the NKVD, was in the business of inciting people to commit acts that would be punishable under Article 58 of the Soviet Penal Code. And Article 58 dealt with people who were considered to be enemies of Soviet power, and an overt act that would be suitable for investigation and incarceration would be to say something that undermined trust and confidence in Soviet power. In other words, to say something that was considered to be politically incorrect. And the expression politically correct and politically incorrect, those two expressions are actually Soviet origin. The first use of politically correct, that phrase that I came across, was the directive issued in, I believe, 1920 or 1921, calling for a campaign to slaughter the Cossacks of the Don River region in Russia. And so when we hear people talking about political correctness and political incorrectness in American society, it really should alarm us, because the idea here is that politics, as defined by a ruling elite, somehow defines morality, and what is politically incorrect could be seen as perhaps a capital offense if you're recognized as a class enemy or an enemy of the state. But the Soviet NKVD, in other words, was behaving pretty much the same way that the FBI is behaving now, at least in principle, and they had their own contrived terrorist plots and assassination plots. And Solzhenitsyn describes many of them. They have the same kind of flavor that you can detect in what the FBI is doing today. They've, for the last 10 years, actually 12 years, have been involved in very little more than finding patsies, identifying socially isolated, marginalized people, and then using their troupe of play actors, their false flag theater traveling company, to entrap these people and entice them into saying something stupid into a recorder or doing something that would be an overt gesture in the direction of carrying out a plot. And what's really telling to me, Dr. Stan, is the fact that when they approach these people, they're usually young men of limited means and often relatively limited mental agility. They approach these people, and rather than talking about the impudence of the infidels that they do not make is make Islam, they're talking about the various offenses against Sharia law, women who are driving and conducting commercial affairs unaccompanied or dressing in ways that are provocative. They're not talking about the fact that women in this country, for whatever reason, brazenly parade about without wearing burqas. They're not talking about the fact that they're living in a materialistic society, which, of course, is a materialistic society that is thoroughly impious. They don't talk about these things. They don't talk about the grievances of true believers that they're surrounded by infidels. They talk about the fact that the United States government is murdering Muslims. They'll talk about the things that are being done in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Yemen and things that happened in Iraq. They'll identify somebody who's got a certain sense of idealism that is offended by the spectacle of the United States government committing aggressive war, which, of course, is a crime against our Constitution to begin with. And they will take this grievance, and then they will start working on the minds of people who are receptive to that, and then they will find ways of perverting that into a type of rancor and hostility that is very useful for the purpose of carrying out these phony plots. That's happened on at least a dozen occasions or more when they're dealing with people of relatively relatively substantial intelligence. In the Seas of David case and some other plots involving people in the East Coast, the FBI has simply focused their attentions on people who are either mentally deficient or mentally handicapped and found some ways of trying to entice these people into doing the same kinds of things. But all this is being done in order to manufacture phony and controlled terrorist plots in order to provide this constant and self-replenishing image in the public mind that we're under siege. So every six or eight months, we'll hear about the FBI triumphantly stymieing another plot that it had contrived. That's exactly what the KGB did.
I think most Americans don't understand that the United States has more people in prison per capita than any other nation in the world. The United States has more people in prison per capita than any other nation in the world. Why is that? Why? Because they've got all sorts of people in prison who shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
This is the unfortunate thing. And basically, of course, they will come up with means of, for instance, Dr. Brzezinski, who had a treatment for cancer. They were going to send him to prison for 200 years. Was it because he wasn't hurting people? No, he was helping people. Well, what was he doing that was dishonest? He didn't do anything dishonest, but some of his medicine was shipped across interstate boundaries. And they were going to send him to prison for 200 years unless he would take a plea bargain. And this is why certainly the government certainly wins about 97 or 98% of all of its cases when they go to prison, when they go to trial. So people take plea bargains rather than take a short prison sentence rather than go to prison for 200 years. Ladies and gentlemen, what rational government would want to send a doctor to prison for 200 years because he had a treatment that was effective for cancer, and that's what Dr. Brzezinski's treatment is, and was and is today? This is what we're up against. Go ahead.
On that point, and in that vein, there's an observation from a chapter, I believe it's chapter 4 of the Gulag Archipelago, called the Blue Caps. Blue Caps, of course, preferred to the KGB or the NKVD. They wore hats of military issue that were decorated with a blue boundary, and their shoulder boards would be decorated with blue as well. There's a really interesting glimpse into the psychology of the Soviet era, the Stalin era Soviet apparatus of investigation and prosecution. Just give us a person, we'll create the case. That was what many of them said jokingly, and it was their slogan. What we think of as torture, they think of as good work. And then a couple of paragraphs later, Solzhenitsyn elaborated on what went on in the minds of people who carried out these policies. What prompted them all to slip into harness and pursue so zealously, not truth, but totals of the processed and condemned, because it was most comfortable for them not to be different from the others, and because these totals meant an easy life, supplementary pay, awards and decorations, promotions and rank, and the expansion and prosperity of the organs themselves. If they ran up high totals, they could loaf when they felt like it or do poor work and go out and enjoy themselves at night. And that is just what they did. Low totals led to their being kicked out, to the loss of their feed bag. For Stalin could never be convinced that in any district or city or military unit, he might suddenly cease to have enemies. Now that last observation is so obviously relevant to our situation today in the United States. We're not going to be allowed to believe that we've run out of enemies, that we're somehow in an environment where we're not constantly under siege from people who irrationally hate us for our freedom and whose every waking thought is devoted to killing Americans simply because we're American. It's the same cultivated siege mentality that existed in Stalin's Soviet Union. Once again, what we're suffering from is not nearly as aggressive a strain as the affliction that descended upon the Soviet Union during Joseph Stalin's era. We don't have tens of millions of people being rounded up and starved to death the way that happened in Ukraine in the early 1930s, for instance. I'm talking about the fact that we're dealing with a disease that is obviously kindred to that which befell the Soviet Union, and we can see the symptoms very plainly. And then Solzhenitsyn said, that was why they felt no mercy, but instead an explosion of resentment and rage toward those maliciously stubborn prisoners who opposed being fitted into the totals, who would not capitulate to sleeplessness or the punishment's duller hunger. By refusing to confess, they menaced the interrogator's personal standing. It was as though they wanted to bring him down. In such circumstances, all measures were justified.
I want to just interrupt you there, William. I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get your writings, and certainly how they can get to your PayPal button.
I really appreciate that, Dr. Stan. My website is called Pro Libertate, ProLibertate, Pro Libertate. And you can find it by going to Google or another search engine and typing in Pro Libertate and my last name, Grigg, G-R-I-G-G. Or if you simply type in my name, William Grigg, or William N. as in Norman Grigg, Pro Libertate should be the first return you'd get. Certainly, if you combine my name and title of the website, you'll be able to find it very quickly. The direct address is freedominourtime.blogspot.com. freedominourtime.blogspot.com. I try to update it a couple of times a week. I've been somewhat remiss over the last week until just a couple of days ago because I've been busy with some other projects. But there is an essay that was published a couple of days ago at Pro Libertate entitled No More Hesitation, which talks about a story that broke last week involving a company in Minnesota that was a contractor for the Department of Homeland Security that was creating target practice images for training police officials, police SWAT team operatives, and so forth, that depicted, among other targets, pregnant women, small children, and elderly people who are carrying guns. And the use of these targets was to desensitize and disinhibit police officers to the idea of killing pregnant women, small children, and the elderly. That was the whole purpose of generating these training protocols. And then I talk about a number of cases in Minnesota as well. Once again, we're talking about a company that was located in Minnesota that had a $2 million contract with the Department of Homeland Security to produce these training materials. But I talk about a number of cases in the state of Minnesota where you've had that ethic put into place and is involved, and this has led to the completely avoidable death or severe injury of completely innocent people, including in one instance that I talked about, one of several I could have written about, where an undercover police officer in plainclothes was shot by another police officer who used a machine gun who followed that training protocol perfectly. He had no hesitation when it came to unloading on this person who was readily identifiable as a police officer because he had been trained to have no hesitation. They're talking about turning these people into automatons. The thing that defines us as people, really, is our capacity to hesitate rather than killing somebody else in circumstances where killing is not justified. But it's always justified in the minds of some people in the name of officer safety and the advancement of state power.
And yet, of course, we never talk about the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill.
Yeah.
Because we've taken the Ten Commandments out of our schools. We've taken the Ten Commandments out of our police force. We've taken the Ten Commandments, certainly, even out of our churches. When was the last time you heard any minister talking about the Ten Commandments and certainly our duty as Christians? Once again, Sydney, how can people get your PayPal button?
It's at the bottom of every essay at my blog, Pro Libertate. Once again, Pro Libertate is the name of the blog. freedominourtime.blogspot.com is the direct address. At the bottom of every blog, there's a PayPal button for those who have the means to donate and who are on PayPal. And I really do appreciate all the help that we're getting. It's what's keeping me and my family alive, to be blunt about the matter.
And Chris Barber and I do support Wood. Yes. We think he does a wonderful job. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, William, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program here. And we do need another newsletter one of these days.
Well, I sent it about 2.5 hours ago.
Okay, wonderful.
Yes, you should have it. And
okay,
I hope it'll be suitable. And one of the things I talk about in that newsletter is the observations and the perspective of Alexander Solzhenitsyn and comparing what happened in the Stalin Soviet Union to what's happening today. And at the beginning of that newsletter, interesting enough, there's a quote that I use as an epigram from Solzhenitsyn. He says, "Power is a poison, well known for thousands of years. If only no one were ever able to acquire material power over others. But to the human being who has faith in some force that holds dominion over all of us and who is therefore conscious of his own limitations, power is not necessarily fatal. For those, however, who are unaware of any higher sphere, it is a deadly poison. For them, there is no antidote." Now, that's the perspective of somebody who is on the receiving end of power deployed that way, pitilessly, without stint or limit, by people who recognized no power higher than that of the state that employed them. To them, all things were permitted. And there's another quote that I offer here from The Red Sword, which was a newspaper published by the Soviet secret police in 1919. They said, "We reject the old systems of morality and humanity invented by the bourgeoisie to oppress and exploit the lower classes. Our morality has no precedent, and our humanity is absolute because it rests on new ideal. Our aim is to destroy all forms of oppression and violence. To us, everything is permitted." That's the great secret of the totalitarian mindset. They don't recognize a power that holds dominion over all of us. They recognize no power superior to their own.
And because this is so reminiscent of the fact that we are assassinating people throughout the world, of course, it's not anything new. It's been going on for a long time, but at least now they're talking about it. And they're just saying, well, of course, we can't let people see the legal justification for this because that's a matter of national security. But what really bothers me, William, is that there's no outcry. There's no outcry from our political leaders. There's no outcry from our religious leaders. Where is the outcry from the leaders of our conservative and even our liberal organizations? Probably the only thing is the ACLU that's saying anything at all. And I hate to find myself on the same side as they are. Well, William, thank you so very much for getting that off to me. We'll look forward to it, and we'll look forward to talking to you in the very near future.
God bless, Dr. Stan.
And you too. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we hope you enjoy our conversation with William Grigg. I always do. I always look forward to our conversation because I think that William is one of the clearest thinkers that we have. And as you know, I'm getting a little older, and I certainly want to know that there are well-versed people who are going to be carrying on when I'm no longer here. And I think William will be one of those people who will be leading the conservative movement and trying to get people to understand the true spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged today. Well, I just want to mention a couple of things. If you live in the Los Angeles area, I will be speaking at the Long Beach Convention Center a week from Sunday. That's the 3rd of March. And that is at the Health Freedom Expo, the Health Freedom Expo. And that they, apparently they have 5,000 or 6,000 people attending this. And I will be having a booth on Friday afternoon and all day Saturday. And then, of course, I'll be speaking Sunday morning. And if you're there in that area and you drop by, well, I would love to talk to you. And certainly that's the Health Freedom Expo at the Long Beach Convention Center. And then, of course, we do want to mention that you need to get our book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't read it, you really need to. And why do you need to get it? Well, because it'll explain to you what's really going on today. If you look at what's happening, a lot of it just doesn't make sense. Once you understand the secret behind all of this, it will make sense to you. And this book will have an impact. It's had an impact on a lot of people, between 50 and 100,000 copies out there. We are incidentally involved in probably our last printing of the book, at least the last printing I will be doing. You can get a case of the books if you'd like to at a ridiculously low cost. If you can't afford to, at least get a copy of the book and read it. And then, of course, if you can't afford that, you can certainly go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, scroll down to videos, go to the first video, and it's the talk from which the book came. I gave the talk, and somebody called me and said, we want to print that. And I said, fine, put it in a book. And they said, well, you'll have to put it in the book and give us the references. And so 6 months later, the book, of course, was ready to be published. And it has had an impact on people's lives. I think it will help you to better understand what's going on. And if you'd like a copy of Brotherhood of Darkness, or you'd like to even consider getting a case of them, our number is 1-800-544-8927. We got an email today, or either that or they call, I'm not sure which, from Hong Kong. They wanted to get a case of books there. We've got an email from England. They want a case of the books over there. People have read the book. They understand it's important, and I think you will too. If you've not read it, let me suggest you read it. If you can't afford to buy the copy of the book, why, certainly you can watch me give the talk from which the book came at RadioLiberty.com, and the title of the book is Brotherhood of Darkness. Well, then, of course, we hope that many of you will get my talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan, because it'll bring you up to date with what's really going on behind the scenes. Of course, if you want to know how they kill people, they've been killing them for a long time. You want to get my interviews with government assassins, and this interview for CD set we did several years ago. Certainly one of these government assassins is dead now. The other one's disappeared. And the other one, of course, the other gentleman I interview is the man who tracked down. The man who was killed, hired to kill General George Patton. Yes, we kill our military people. We kill our politicians. They killed Martin Luther King. We have actually a 4-CD set on the execution of Martin Luther King in a book. They killed Bobby Kennedy. We have a 4-CD set and a book of Who Killed Bobby and a DVD on that. We have, of course, several of 4-tape sets on President Kennedy, and we even have an excellent DVD on the murder of President Kennedy. They routinely kill people in America, ladies and gentlemen. We don't like to think about it, but unfortunately, this is the reality of the world we live in today, a nation that's turned against God. And when a nation turns against God, God eventually turns against that nation. Remember, God who gave us life gave us liberty. But can the liberty of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice will not sleep forever. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you.
Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer. God bless America. That I love.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. It is Friday. It is the 22nd of February. Coming towards the end of the month, we made it almost to the second month in 2013. A lot of speculation taking place. A lot of people thinking that the financial situation is about to come to a head. Where are we moving in this country? It's no place good. With March 1st being the day of infamy again, that's going to be the day when the sequestration supposedly takes place, allowing 800,000 people to go home from their jobs because of the phony game that they play. Nobody's figured out what sequestration means, but you're supposed to act like you know what it means just because you hear somebody talk about it. Or is anybody really talking about it? On the streets. Well, the people in the financial industry